There are 39 milahot, which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 High FM.
This is Soul to Soul on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Vayishlach, Tov Shin Pei Vav. Really, a little more than a week until beautiful Hanukkah comes in. Hanukkah will be next Sunday night, Be'ez Hashem. Getting excited already, getting sort of hyped for Hanukkah. And a warm welcome to our entire radio family. Thank you for everyone joining us. Those who are here, those who might already be on holiday and sitting somewhere in a relaxed chair listening to the program. We appreciate every single one of you who tunes in and becomes part of our radio family. As always, the show today is brought to you as a Refuah Shleima for many, many Chayim. We list just a few of them. So it's Yehuda Hillel HaLevi, Ben Shulamis Lea, Menachem Ruvain, Ben Pesa Yehudis, Avram Yankov, Ben Shterna Sara, Akava Bas Libamina, Ben Yomina Bas Yenta, Shulamis Lea, Bas Asha, Tzivya, Bas Etka, Besoich Shor Choli Yisrael, amongst all the others who might need a Yeshua, who might need HaKadosh Baruch Hu's embrace, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kiss, some intervention in some tzara, some difficulty we're having. The Eibishter should help us all, Be'ez Hashem, and bring Yeshua's nechamas and simchas to Ali Gidin, wherever they might be. So we have this week the confrontation between Yaakov and Esav. And by Yaratz Esav Lekrosay, Esav comes running to meet Yaakov. By Shakeyu, and he kisses him, by Yivku, and they weep. Esav's actions were sort of quite atypical of a man who sort of harbored that and sort of almost an implacable hatred for Yaakov. Rashi quotes Chazal that indeed Esav sein el Yaakov, his hatred is immutable. And it was kind of without any rationale. It's part of his very, very DNA. It's just that at that moment, his feelings of compassion were aroused. We sort of seem to have a problem accepting the verity that Esav sein el Yaakov. Right? Does this apply to all any Yehudim or just those who sort of fall under the rubric of Esav Amalek? Obviously, this is a discussion that goes way beyond the scope of this talk. Rav Yosef Shur was appointed the chief district judge in the city of Tarnopol. As such, he sat at the head of the court and was given final say with regards to verdicts. One day, five men came before the magistrates claiming to have seen a Jew set fire to someone's house. This was a serious, serious allegation, given that houses, of course, were made of wood and highly flammable. One fire could cause serious damage. Each of the five witnesses took an oath and each described in great detail how the Jewish offender went about preparing the fire and sort of stoking it to burn with even greater intensity. The prosecutor who presented the case felt that it was an open and shut case. Rav Yosef, the presiding judge, listened to each word but said nothing. This was surprising, since the judge who was to render judgment would always question the witnesses. The other judges attributed the presiding judge's silence to his sort of embarrassment. After all, the defendant was Jewish, which certainly must have made Rav Shur uncomfortable. Right? All the judges wrote guilty, and they were discussing a lengthy sentence for the defendant as they waited patiently for Rav Shur to render the final decision. Rav Shur declared, "I find the five witnesses guilty of starting the blaze and covering up their iniquitous actions by framing the defendant." He let the words sink in, and then he explained the reason for his decision. Five able-bodied men stood watch as a weak Jew set fire to a house that could have destroyed our entire city. Why did they not stop him? They not only did nothing, they actually meticulously watched every single thing that he did, maintaining a sort of a presence of mind to record it perfectly. This is clearly a case of Esav Soin El Yaakov, anti-Semitic bias, and false testimony. They are the ones who should be on trial and found guilty. This is 101.9 Chai FM, the program of Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parashas Vayishlach, Tov Shin Pei Vav. Let's talk a little bit about such an important topic. You know, a few weeks ago in Parshas Vayera, we learned about the malachim, the angels that come to Avram Avinu, right? And that certain task they had to do, one of them was that they promised him, Shoyim Oshuv Elecho Ke'eskaya, I'm going to certainly come back to you in exactly a year's time, V'nevein L'Sara Yishtecha, and your wife Sarah is going to have a son. Right? The reaction of Sarah to that incredible promise was quite surprising. She says, Vatitzchak Sarah Bikir Balema. Sarah laughed internally and said, and all the commentaries have dealt with this thing. How is it possible that this great, great righteous woman, this great tzaddikess, couldn't believe that it's within HaKadosh Baruch Hu's gambit, within HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ability to change nature and to give her a son, even in the time of her old age? So the Sfarna explains this in an incredible, incredible way. He says, and what he says, what his holy words contain, tremendous, tremendous chizuk, tremendous encouragement and inspiration on the incredible, incredible power of our prayers. And not only our prayers, the prayers of every single individual has the incredible power to change the whole world, to change all the laws of nature as we need to. And this Sfarna explains that Sarah Imenu thought to herself that these words of this Malach, Ka'es Chaya Ulasara Vein, in exactly 1 year's time, Sarah is going to have a child, could only be assumed to be a bracha, a blessing. That the Malach is giving her a bracha, a blessing, like as normal, as a Navi would give a blessing to a person. As we find by Elisha Navi, where he blessed the Shunammite woman in Melachim Beis chapter 4, by Yemri said, La moye dazeko eis chaya at chavekas pain. Elisha was a Navi, and he tells her again, in exactly a year's time, you're going to be hugging a child. Right? But it never sort of entered her mind, never entered Sarah's mind, that the Malach was actually coming as a messenger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to actually give her the news that she was going to have a child. And therefore, she laughed to herself. And she said, it's not possible that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to change the entire setup of the natural a world just because a malach came and gave me a bracha. That can't work. It can't be strong enough. It can't be effective enough. Just a bracha to change the whole setup of the world. And she was for sure in her mind that such a huge miracle of literally a woman who was absolutely unable to actually have a child. She didn't even have the parts of the body necessary to have a child and to bring her back to a youthful stage where she could have, for an old woman like she was 89 years old. It's not possible that could happen, only in one of two ways. Either that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, that he is Kol Yochel, he can do anything. He should command and make a specific order that this should happen. Or that a person should be able to find favor in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes with his prayer, with his tefillah. In other words, that tefillah has the ability to actually change the laws of nature. And since she thought that the Malach who was speaking to her was only sort of giving her his own best wishes, his own bracha, and she didn't realize that he was actually coming as a messenger, as an agent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, therefore she laughed and she didn't believe. Because the bracha of a Malach, it's not possible that should create such a big miracle like that. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered. HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered her and said, "Vayeim Hashem el Avram." Hashem said to Avram, "Lama zetzocha kosara? Why is Sarah laughing? Hayipolemi Hashem davar? Is anything too wondrous that Hashem cannot perform?" In other words, the Malach didn't say this just as kind of a bracha. But he was actually giving a revelation. He was telling news to Sarah in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it wasn't here just the bracha of a malach. This was actually a agency, a messenger sent specifically by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give her this good tidings. And in fact, just to quote what this Sfarna says. It says, what does it mean, my titzchak tzara laughed? That she thought that this was the words of the malach, just a blessing of a navi. That's all it was, as we see by Elisha. And it wasn't a nevuah, right? It wasn't a prophecy or a agency from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore she thought that this could never happen to an elderly person like her, that just a navi giving her a blessing couldn't even work, because to actually return her to a youthful stage after she was old, that's mamish like tchias hameisim, like resurrection of the dead. That it's only possible to happen with the actual specific injunction and command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, or with the a specific tefillah that can somehow find favor in the eyes of Hashem, and then it's possible. Then nothing is too wondrous for Hashem to do. And she didn't realize that the Malach was not saying this as a bracha, but it actually was giving over news in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it comes out, therefore, that the tefillah of a person, the prayer of a person, is so high and so effective and so beneficial, even more than a blessing of an angel. And we can explain this perhaps using the analogy, the words of Rav Nosson Mibreslev, that he wrote that all the worlds, with everything that goes on them, or whatever avodah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes on in the upper worlds, which of course we have absolutely no idea of what that is, and it's done obviously with the greatest fear and the greatest trepidation before Hashem. Eine oila etzla yisporeh klal. It has no power. It pales into insignificance in its power. Keneged sicha achas utfila achas shel ben adam. When I compare it to the power that is wielded by one person issuing even one prayer of a lowly person, shebezeh olam, someone in this world has more power with his tefillah than all the malachim and all the holy beings that are close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and can affect even more and bring about even greater changes and greater things in the world than malachim can. So we see from here that the benefit of a tefillah of a Jew is so precious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even more than the malach themselves. And therefore, it is within the power of every single Jew with this tefillah to literally change the laws of nature, something which a malach, with his all the good intention of a blessing, could not do. And therefore, we can explain what it says in the parasha when Yaakov says to the malach, who he's fighting with, the ancient of Esav, and he said, I'm not going to send you away unless you give me a blessing. In other words, Yaakov is asking for the blessing of the Malach. And the Malach says, Lo Yaakov Yehameh Shimcha, your name will no longer be called Yaakov, Kim Yisrael. Why? Ki Sarisa Melakim Vimanoshim, you fought with God and with other men, and Vatucha, you were able. In other words, the Malach was saying to Yaakov, you don't need my bracha, because the bracha of any Jew is higher than any bracha that I can give him that. We'll be back in a moment with much, much more. We're going to flesh this out a little bit. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in 1 moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul, back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parashas Vayishlech Tov Shin Peva. We are dealing with the importance, the incredible, incredible power of tefillah, of our prayer. And once we actually explained, as we did in the previous segment, the tremendous gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us, we've received from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So This is definitely nothing more precious than tefillah, that through that we can actually change, overrule, recreate nature. So now we have to sort of certainly take advantage of this amazing, amazing gift and to know how actually to use it. In the Sefer Chasidim, in Siman 612, he brings 7 things that stop tefillah, that are absolutely essential for tefillah. And let's just go through them quickly. And he says as follows. It's written in the Sefer of Tshuva of Rav Sadia Gaon, the great Rav Sadia Gaon, that there are 7 things that stop the tefillah of a person from being heard. And his all his beseeching, if these things are not met, as much as he beseeches Hashem, it's not going to be accepted. The first one is that from the very day that a certain decree has been sealed against a person, and we see that from Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu, since there was a decree made against him that he wasn't able to go and enter the land of Israel, even though that he begged in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it didn't. His tefillah didn't help, as it says, "Vayeskanan Hashem Ma'esa Yadavin 515 tefillahs," and the answer was, "Rav Loch, I'm sorry, Al Tosif Daber Lai Oid, don't offer up another prayer," right? But the problem is that could cause a person to give up hope. Says, "Oi, how do I know? Maybe a person might think to himself, why should I invest all my energy in tefillah if there's a decree? I don't have the ability to change the decree." But he says that question, one could even answer, by Moshe Rabbeinu. If he knew that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already made a decree and sealed the decree that he wasn't going to go into Eretz Yisrael, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu wait? And only after 515 tefillos, he says to him, stop, don't daven another way. He should have stopped him right away. Says the Duvna Magid, he gives an analogy, that there were two people who went into a shop. There was a huge, huge sale going on. And they had with their small children, and they wanted to buy some clothing for him. So one of them spent a lot of time. He kept measuring, and he went again and measured again to make sure that the garment actually fit his child exactly. And the other one just went up to the shop, quickly measured, and just grabbed a garment or two and left the shop. So they asked the owner of the shop, I don't understand, what's the reason of this great distinction? One guy is so picky, so exact in the way he measures it, and the other one just grabs and runs. So the owner of the shop said, it's very, very obvious. The first customer, he has a ben yochid, he has one and only child. And therefore, he's got to make sure that it fits 100% right? Because otherwise it's going to be a waste of money. But if this child can't wear it, it's never going to be used. But the second customer, Baruch Hashem, he has a large family with lots of children, and therefore, if the garment doesn't fit this one, it'll fit another one. It definitely will get used. He says, and that's the same thing in our topic. It says, the purpose of the 515 tefillos of Moshe Rabbeinu was for all the future generations, right? And there's no such thing as a tefillah that goes for nothing, that is wasted. And that's what Chazal say on the pasuk, V'eschanan el Hashem bo'esai, I beseeched Hashem at that time, saying, what does it mean, lamer? What's this extra word, lamer, to say? So says Rabbi Azariah, it says, to say for all the generations that they should be able to live and benefit from their tefillis, from the Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillis, whenever they have Eitzara. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, even though it said to him, you're not going to be able to cross the Jordan River into Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, he began to beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, the tefillos, even if they couldn't help him, they were invested, they were put aside, they would definitely help someone. And in my Avraham, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that Avraham was going to try to daven and pray for Sodom, for the city, to save the city of Sodom. And even though he knew that it's already been sealed, the decree, and his tefillah was not going to help at all to avert the decree, right? But since Avraham Avinu was going to have many, many, many generations after him of thousands of thousands and tens of thousands of millions of Jews, and therefore it makes sense, it's appropriate that he should daven. Because even if this tefillah is not going to help at this moment, it's going to help for another generation, for one of his children after him. Similarly, says the Baal Shem Tov, explains the words of Chazal, the Gemara in Brochus, Davov, that it says, we address the concept of Tfil, the Gemara there says, as Devarim Ha'aimdim Berumai Shelaylam. These are matters that stand at the very, very center of the universe. Ubnei Adam mizalzlim b'hem, and people don't treat it with enough respect. And you have to understand, what does it mean? How people are treated with no respect? How do you understand the word? What does it mean? Ayimdim berumai shelaylam, standing in the center of the universe. He says the intention is that those people who don't understand and perhaps belittle the power of tefillah, because they're so depressed and so broken, and they have like no hope of anything. And they say, so many tefillahs, we already davened, and we were never answered. What purpose is there to daven? However, the truth is, there is not a single tefillah in the world that goes for nothing. Right? A krecht, a sigh of a Jew never gets lost, chas v'shalom. Right? And the tears, no tears are ever in vain. And even when the gates of heaven are locked, that tefillah stands. And it's there. It's the Rumay Shel Olam. It's standing there in the very essence of the world. And it's waiting for the moment where it's going to be needed, where it's going to be utilized. When the gates are for that tefillah, when the gates of heaven are going to be open, when the gates of mercy are going to be open, then all the tefillahs come. And they all have effect. And they all accomplish tremendous things in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's known what the Magidim say. You know, we ask in the bracha of Allah Tzadikim, the Saint Sachar Tzayv L'chola Boitchim B'Shim Chamemes. Give a good reward to all those who trust in your name truthfully. And again, we have to understand, what does it mean? Why the Tzadikim? Well, the Tzadikim, we know that we daven for them. But the tzaddikim, they are on such a high level. They're surely considered amongst those who trust Hashem's name. There's no greater than tzaddikim in their trust of Hashem. So why did the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, why did the men of the great assembly make a tefillah for them? Why do we have to daven for them? So they explain. And of course, the level that tzaddikim operate on, those that trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the time. Of course, it's so much more than ours. And we don't have any idea, any concept of the level of the great tzaddikim. But nevertheless, because of their very, very great high level of trust and reliance in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so therefore, maybe their tefillah is a little bit lacking, and the edge in their beseeching Hashem is not there. And since it's impossible, we can't, no one can manage without the tefillah of the tzaddikim, therefore Chazal instituted that the whole Jewish nation should daven for the tzaddikim, that Hashem should put tremendous reward for all those who trusted HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name truthfully, because the incredible benefit of a tefillah is greater and more precious before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And even though the level of the betokon of these tzaddikim is so high, nevertheless, it's impossible. We need to daven for them to ensure that their tefillahs even go through. And the Chasev Chasidim brings the second reason is, second thing that can stop tefillah is, that if someone davens without proper kavana, so again, his tefillah is not going to be heard. As it says in Tehillim, vayefatchu befiim, they try to convince HaKadosh Baruch Hu with just their mouths, the libam lo'nochon imam, but their hearts weren't in it. And again, we seem to find a contradiction to this, because in tefillah, we sometimes say, Hashem hears the tefillah of anybody. In other words, that even just the mouth, even without the heart, sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu hears that tefillah. So the Zohar HaKadosh reveals to us that there's a certain heaven that's called, it's called Psulei HaMakdoshim, where all the tefillahs that are not offered up with kavana, all of them go into that place and they're preserved there until that person merits to daven properly and with proper intent and kavana one time. If he davens one tefillah with kavana, then all the other tefillahs that he once said without kavana, they all go up And they all accompanied that one tefillah in front of the Kisei HaKavod. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu hears all the tefillahs that everyone says, even those that are said without Kavanah, but just on the condition that at one point they'll be able to join together with one tefillah that he said properly. The third thing, says the Sefer Chassidim, the third condition that is necessary is someone, God forbid, hates Torah and doesn't listen to the words of the Torah, so his tefillah can't be heard. In fact, it says in Mishlei, Meisir oznoi mishnei haTorah, if someone removes himself and doesn't want to hear Torah, gam tefilosoi ta'eva, his prayers are considered disgusting by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the third thing. You have to be in line. You have to accept the validity of God and Torah and all the things that he stands for in order for your tefillah to be able to get in. Number four, someone who doesn't respond to the words of a poor person and closes his ear from the cries, from the desperation of a person who really needs his help, so he also, we can cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Hashem won't answer him. In the same way as he was turned a blind ear to the tefillahs of people or the cries, the beseeching of people who really need his help, Hashem will do the same to his tefillah. Number five, someone, God forbid, extorted or stole money and is eating something that's forbidden to him. So his tefillah cannot be heard also, as it says in Pesukim in Micha. V'asher ochlu she'er ami, they ate the thing that belongs to my nation. Az yizaku l'Hashem v'lo yano Hashem. They'll cry out to Hashem. Hashem's not going to want to listen. V'ashishi, the sixth thing is, if a person davens in an unclean way or an unclean state and without purity, so again, his tefillah cannot be heard. As again, there's a pasuk in Yeshaya that says, "Gam ki sarbu tefillah nena shamea." Even if they daven lots, I'm not going to listen. Why yetchen domim ileu? Their hands are full of blood. They're not clean people. They're not people who have a good record. I don't want to hear them. And the seventh is someone, unfortunately, who has done so many averot, so many terrible, terrible things, and shows no inclination, no desire even to do tshuva, so then Hashem is not interested in his tefillah either. Right? The proof for the words of the Sefer Chassidim that a condition for the acceptance of one's tefillah is a tefillah that comes from the very depth of a person's hearts. And we can learn this from Chana, the mother of Shmuel. And it says by her, her husband Elkanah said to her, Chana, lama tifki, why are you crying? Why are you not eating? Why are you in such a bad way? I'm better than you than 10 sons. Then it says, Tatakam Chana Tana got up after she ate in Shiloh and after she drank and she started davening. Eli HaKoyim was sitting on a chair next to the Mishkan. The Moras Nefesh, she was very bitter about Tispalel al Hashem. She davened Uboche Sivche and she was crying. Ask the Malbim, how come Chana waited until now till daven? Why didn't she daven earlier than this? And the Malbim explains that until this point, she completely relied on the tefillah of her husband, who was a big tzaddik. Elkanah was a big tzaddik. But now that she saw that he gave up, right, and he stopped asking for mercy because she heard him say, but I'm better than you than 10 sons. In other words, he was trying to placate, you're not going to have children, but at least you have me. So what? That aroused her. Now she had to go daven herself. And then, right, there were three things that happened at one time in order that her tefillah should be accepted. Number one, that she herself was moras nefesh. She was so bitter. And Hashem always hears the tefillah of those who have broken hearts. Number two, she was davening al Hashem, that the tefillah was with a tremendous and full kavanah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. He was the only one who can answer a tefillah. And number three, uvochay sifke, she was crying. And the gates of tears are never, ever locked up. As we find in the Ramban on the Pasuk and Pashas Mishpatim, called Almana v'yosem loisan, and don't dare oppress a widow or an orphan. Because, kim tzoik yitzak elai, because if they end up crying out to me, shamaya eshma tzakasai, I'm going to hear his cry. And the simple meaning, it means the reason is that since they are nebuch, they are people, they are downtrodden people, and no one looks after them, therefore Hashem is going to take the side, Hashem is going to hear their cry. However, the Ramban there writes something else. He says that all these people, they don't have any reliance on themselves, and there's no one to look after them, so they completely trust in Hashem. Right? And now you're putting this person under pressure because, you know, you think you can bully him, you can take advantage of him because he has no one to stick up for him. You know, he's going to have the greatest ally in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be his ally. Maybe other people ignore him and other people consider him unimportant, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come to his aid and take revenge. Revenge them. And that's just by them crying out. They elicit the strongest help from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In chapter 107 of Tehillim, it mentions there are four people who have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those who survive a sea journey, those who have been locked up in the prison, right? A sick person who was healed, and those who went through the deserts. And the Eben Ezra explains there that all these people, right, whatever efforts they make may be unsuccessful because they've already, all of them are literally standing by the gates of death. And then they're crying out to Hashem. But we still have to think about that sometimes the expression is vayizaku with a zayin, and sometimes it's vayitzako. If you look there in the capital, sometimes it says with the Zion, sometimes it says with the Tzadi. And the Malbim writes over there in Perek Vav that in the those who are traveling in the desert and in the sea, there it says vayitzako with a Tzadi. And there by the sick person or the person who's in jail, there it says vayizako with a Zion. Why? Because tzaka with a tzadi is greater than zaka. And therefore, it says, vayitzaku, right? Vayatzileim, and Hashem save them. By the sick person and the person in jail, there it says a zayin, right? It says, vayoshieim. And it doesn't, there, the different word doesn't say, vayatzileim, Hashem save them, vayoshieim, Hashem help them. Because, and hatzala, salvation is even greater than Yeshua. So we need to understand, says, why? Why by the someone who's gone through the desert or in the sea, does it say that tzadi vayitzaku, which is even greater than vayizaku? The pshat seems to be when a person is sick, lo yelenu, or so he relies at the beginning on the doctor and on the medicines. And when he's in jail, so he relies on you know, and the askanim are going to try to get him out, and his lawyers, and therefore, yes, they daven, but it's not a completely desperate tefillah because they're hoping other things are going to work for them. It doesn't come from the very depth of the hearts, and therefore, it's only zaka. But when he's in the desert or mamish in the great big sea, he has no hope. There's no one to rely on, and then he turns straight to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then the word is vayitzaku with a tzani. And then he's zeicha to vayatzileim. He's merits a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous salvation from, and that's even greater than a Yeshua, because he's in a truly desperate situation and he turns only only to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is 101.9 Chai FM. Program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Vayishlach Tov Shin Pei Vav. Thank you so much for joining us at this beautiful, beautiful Erev Shabbos. So I think the schools are over, and obviously the kids are home, so parents' lives are a little bit more complicated, but still Erev Shabbos comes, Baruch Hashem, and we have this chus to bring in Shabbos together with our families again. Baruch Shech Yonah V'Kimonah. We got through another action-packed week. And as we always do at this time, just to give you the important Zemanim, the important times you need to know for this coming Shabbos. So this afternoon, the earliest time to bench your lich, to get your candles on, is at 5:24. 5:24, you can already light up and you can fill your house with the light of Shabbos, with the radiance of Shabbos, with the beauty of Shabbos, with the relaxation and the tranquility of Shabbos already from 5:24. You can get almost a full 26 hours of Shabbos this week. From 5:25, we'll see that Shabbos Kodesh only ends at 7:25. So you can get an extra 2 hours of Shabbos this week. What a bargain. What a worthwhile purchase. And it costs you nothing. It costs you being a little organized this afternoon, making sure everything is where it needs to be. The house is cleaned up. All the food that needs to be on the hot tray is there. We're bathed and ready. And it's really not a difficult thing. And it's such a geschmack thing. Such a beautiful, beautiful thing to welcome in Shabbos early, to let it just sort of sift over us and help us to mellow down and forget all the stresses, all the tzoras, all the difficult things that we've had during the week, all melt away on Shabbos. And Shabbos is our day for a real communion, a real connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let's try to do that as early as we can. If you can't make it at 5:24, so 5:40, 5:55, 6 o'clock, 6:15, all great times to light candles. The absolute latest time for lighting candles this afternoon is at 6:31. 6:31 is the absolute latest, although many, many communities, as usual, adopt the normal fixed summertime beginning for Shabbos, which is 6:15. If you're part of those communities, then as far as you're concerned, 6:15 is the latest time for you to light your Shabbos candles together with your community. But you have until 6:31. Beyond 6:31 is, of course, emergency time, only for those emergencies until sunset. Sunset is at 6:49. So it's getting later. The days are really, really long at this point. But as far as we're concerned, really, if you're a community, that's at 6:15, and that's your deadline. Otherwise, 6:31 is the absolute latest. We said Shkia 6:49, and therefore you want to make sure you can say Shema at night and not have to repeat it again. All you have to do is wait till 7:07. 7:07 is actual night, and you can already then say the Kriya Shema, fulfill the Torah obligation of reading Kriya Shema at night, and then carry on with your beautiful Shabbos. As we continue, then tomorrow, of course, is Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Vayishlach, a very, very long Parsha, one of the longest Parshas in the Torah, but lots and lots of content to the incredible emotional meeting, reunion of two brothers after 22 years, and the whole incident with Dina. So much to talk about, so much to learn in this week's Parsha. And thank God we have the time to do it. So let's chaperein and make sure that it actually happens for ourselves. So the Haftarah, of course, is the Haftarah for Parshas Vayishlach. It's the
the Nevuah of Ovadia. We read the entire book of Ovadia for the Haftarah. It's only one chapter along. And we read that. And then, of course, Shabbos Kaddish continues. Beautiful, long day. Time for everything. Time for a good meal. Time for a bit of a shlof. Time for some family time. Time, of course, to spend some serious time hitting the books, learning, making Shabbos Kaddish into the special holy day that it's meant to be. Shabbos Kaddish ends tomorrow night at 7:25. 7:25 is the actual end of Shabbos, and we go into another beautiful week, the last week before Hanukkah. As we know, Hanukkah begins Sunday night a week, and I'm sure we're all looking forward and excitedly anticipating that. We are talking about electricity. We spoke over the last couple of weeks about adjusting time switches. Last week we spoke about adjusting thermostats. So today we deal with the very relevant question of sort of opening up fridges, ovens, and actually walking into a room where the aircon is on. So if opening the door of a fridge causes any kind of an electrical event to occur, so one may not open the door on Shabbos. Most fridges have an electric light inside that goes on automatically when the fridge door is open. Thus, if the light has not been removed before Shabbos, one may not open the fridge on Shabbos. Right? There are also fridges where a fan turns on or off whenever the door is opened. These fridges and any with sort of similar electrical mechanisms may not be opened on Shabbos at all. In contrast, if it has been ensured that opening the fridge will not turn anything on or off, one may open the fridge on Shabbos at sort of will. Indeed, some permit opening a fridge when the compressor has even as cycled on, but prohibit opening the fridge when the compressor is off. Because then it's open. When you open the door when it's off, that causes warm air to enter the fridge. And since the compressor is activated by an internal thermostat, so opening the fridge may cause the compressor to go on immediately or at least sooner than it might have gone on otherwise. However, practically, one may open the fridge even when the compressor is off. And there are a number of reasons for this. Opening the door is actually going to cause the compressor to turn on, as it is possible that the compressor was about to cycle on anyway. Thirdly, even if opening the door does cause the compressor to sort of cycle on, this was only done indirectly, sort of what we call groman, indirect cause, as opening the door does not itself turn on the compressor. It simply causes warm air to enter, which may in turn affect the compressor. Accordingly, one does not need to worry about a case where there is sort of uncertainty regarding groma combined with the Davoshen Miskaven. So there's enough basis to allow people to open a fridge even in a situation where the compressor is actually off. Right? For the same reason, one may sort of drink cold water from a water cooler without checking whether or not the compressor has actually cycled on. One may also enter a room that has a working air conditioner that is actually controlled by a thermostat, even though opening the door may cause the aircon to cycle on. Firstly, again, it's not certain that opening the door will cause the air conditioner to cycle on. And even if it does cycle on, this was accomplished by a grammar. Similarly, one can open a door or window in a room that has a thermostat, a regulated sort of heater or aircon, right? That's because the person opening the door or window does not intend to affect the machine. It is not certain that opening the door or window will in fact do so. And therefore, if the machine is affected, it will have been accomplished again through grammar. Okay, we're going to come back with a few last comments after the break. This is 101.9 Chai FM, and the program is Soul to Soul. And this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Vayistach, Tov Shin Pei Vav. Just a few minutes left before we sort of run away and finish our own Shabbos preparations. And again, thank you all for being part of it. We are talking about opening and closing electronic items on Shabbos. So we spoke before about an aircon. However, when it comes to an oven, many are strict, are machmir, regarding an oven that is controlled by a thermostat and will not open such a oven when the heating sort of element is cycled off. Since it is a small appliance, opening the door is more likely to cause it to cycle on. So to avoid this problem, some ovens have a so-called Shabbos setting in which the oven produces a steady heat and does not respond at all to a thermostat. Right? When the oven is on this setting, so then everyone agrees that it may be opened and even shut as well. Just to one more point. Let's say if one didn't remember to remove or disable the light of a fridge before Shabbos, he may not open or close the door on Shabbos, as that's going to turn the light on or off. If one needs the food in the fridge for Shabbos, he may seek the help of a nearby non-Jew in order to avoid the prohibition of benefiting from a melacha performed by a non-Jew. One should offer him some food from the refrigerator, at which point he will open the door for his own benefit. Once the non-Jew has opened the fridge door for himself, the Jew may take whatever he needs out of the fridge as well. Now, although generally one may not ask a non-Jew to perform a melacha on Shabbos, here one is not asking him to perform a melacha. Rather, one is asking him to open the refrigerator, which also happens to turn on the light. Afterwards, in order to continue opening and closing the fridge, right, in a permissible way, one may ask the non-Jew to remove the light, because turning off electric lights is only prohibited as a rabbinic issa, and one may ask a non-Jew to do a rabbinic issa, a shvus, the shvus, for the sake of Shabbos, and one's allowed to do it. Okay, that's about all the time we have this week. Bez Hashem, we'll be back, with the help of Hashem, we'll be back next week. In the meantime, I want to wish you all a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos, you and the whole family, to each and every one of our radio listeners. Shabbat Shalom Lekulchem.